All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now stepping away from that Las Vegas money show, we are going to be talking oil and natural gas as we're chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Perspectives Group and joins us every month to recap what's going on big picture price-wise for oil and nat gas, as well as some stocks. And the theme of the stocks today is going to be more on mergers and acquisitions, looking ahead to some stocks that Dan thinks has some chances to run once these deals close. Dan, I do want to start with oil, though, because oil has been rebounding very nice this year so far. We're about 2 months through, but quite frankly, in December, oil was down in the mid-50s. Now it's in the mid-60s, back to price levels we haven't seen since late September. Big picture question here, Dan. What's driving this rebound here and now?
Well, it's almost totally what's going to happen in Iran next. You know, obviously, Team Trump is trying to negotiate something with Iran, but I think they're just delaying. I think the whole purpose of the negotiation is just to buy them more time. But, you know, they're not going to agree to all his demands. And, you know, the buildup in the area, the military buildup there, sure look like to me they're going to attack. I mean, you know, we're recording this on Thursday. By the time you do this, come out with this, maybe the bombs will be falling on Iran. I don't know. But Trump's losing his patience in it for sure.
Well, Dan, maybe bring in a little more of the macro as far as the inventory builds, anything that's happening as far as OPEC, anything else moving the markets outside of that geopolitical part.
Well, all year, EIA has been telling us that the global oil market is oversupplied, but it really doesn't show up in the inventories. I mean, the Wednesday inventory report from EIA, yeah, there was a big build, but our crude oil inventory is still below normal for this year, time of year. Gasoline's a little bit higher. Distillate's 7% or so below normal for this time of year. You know, the economy, the world's economy runs on diesel. It doesn't run on gasoline. We drive around our cars gasoline, but the big equipment and stuff that, you know, builds things for everybody is diesel. And also our farming equipment. Once you get into the spring, there's a big demand for diesel for planting during the planting season. So that'll come around. But, they've been advertising this, you know, the oversupplied oil market. And, you know, I think, and for IEAs, I think it's just kind of political. They want to keep oil prices as low as possible for as long as possible. But I'm kind of surprised that EIA is going along with that because, you know, we're just not seeing it in any inventories. I mean, you can say it's floating around on ships, but if those ships are can't sell their oil because it's banned because of sanctions or something, well, that oil's not really in the market. And then also both the Chinese and the U.S. are refilling our strategic petroleum reserves. Well, the oil that goes in the strategic petroleum reserve is not available for commercial use. So that's only for, you know, a dire emergency or something. So that's out of the market. So I think, and I think Joseph Shatner, I think we agree on this. I think oil prices today are a little bit ahead of themselves because of the situation in Iran. But I think the fundamental supply demand fundamentals are going to cause oil to get to 70 or 75 by the end of the year. I mean, that's what I'm pretty much basing my forecast on.
So, Dan, if both of these agencies are saying that we have too much oil right now, are they saying that it's a supply problem then? Is the U.S. pumping too much? Is OPEC pumping too much? Or are we just not seeing massive demand growth?
Well, they're saying that if all the supply was available to commercial, yeah, we'd be oversupplied. But if half of it's going into strategic petroleum reserves, and then a big chunk of it's in ships that can't sell it to anybody, well, then that's not really going into commercial inventories. So in demand, we're in a low period of demand right now. Once you get into the spring, the driving season, then the demand picks up. It takes more black oil, more crude oil to make summer blend gasolines in the United States and around the world, I guess. But, you know, and then there was this fear that Venezuela was going to pump all this oil. Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, be a little bit of increase. There's, you know, they've reduced some of the legal requirements for getting into Venezuela, but that's not going to happen overnight. So I think once we get a few months down the line, people are going to realize that the markets get tightening up. Now, we have the OPEC meeting on March the 1st, and it's anticipated that they're going to say they're going to start increasing the quotas starting in April again, you know, like 140-something thousand barrels a day, which, you know, compared to the world's oil market of 105 million barrels a day, that's, you know, not even a 1%. one-tenth of 1% increase. So there's only like three countries in OPEC. It's Saudi Arabia, UAE, and maybe Oman that can increase production at all. And I don't think they're going to do it just to reduce oil prices for Trump. So, you know, we'll see. But most of the cartel countries cannot produce up to their current quotas anyway.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's one thing to have a quota. It's another thing to actually meet that quota with production. And so two different things. Well, that's a take on the oil market. Let's also quickly cover nat gas. Nat gas is obviously seasonal. It's weather related. It's regional. The nat gas in Europe is much different than the nat gas in Asia, which is much different than the nat gas in the U.S., which is different than the nat gas price in Canada. So make sense of it for us, Dan. It's been a wild roller coaster ride all year. It's always a volatile market, but a lot of it was based on the weather patterns earlier in the year. Now that's shifted. How are you looking at nat gas for the balance of the year?
Well, nat gas is crazy. And then trying to model some of these companies for me is difficult because I know that some of them were able to sell their gas into the Henry Hub regional market down there. The price spiked over $30 per MMBTU during that winter storm Fern, I think was near the end of January. And, you know, if you have really good marketing teams, when I was at Hess, we actually sold some gas into the New York regional market at $60 per MMBTU when the gas price was like $5 or something. I actually thought when, you know, one of my clerks brought the check in to show me and I said, they must just have the decimal point in the wrong place. And I talked to our marketing group and said, no, we were able to get some gas into New York and they paid us $60 for it. So, you know, these utilities, when you have a real significant weather event, that there's a huge draw on their inventories in that particular region because their storage locations located all over the country. And, you know, let's say a big storm hit Chicago and they are depend heavily on stored gas. And that utility gets calls on, you know, they have to keep the pressure up in the lines. They're going to go out in the market and pay whatever it costs in the spot market to get that gas. So it's hard to see how these prices in the futures market, the price you see in the paper is a front month futures contract. On the day we're recording it, it's already the April contract. Well, everybody knows and all the, you know, futures market traders, they know we have enough gas to make it through April. You know, that's one of the lowest demand periods of the year. So that contract's down. But when you look out further on a futures contract, I look at the December 26 futures contract, and it was trading for $4.31. And, you know, so if you're a gas producer, you can go in the futures market and lock that price right now. You can lock in that price by, you know, buying the futures contracts or selling the futures contracts. Anyway, so it's really hard to evaluate, you know, where gas prices are going to go. But the gas, U.S. gas market, and to some extent the Canadian gas market, demand is increasing significantly because of LNG exports and also because of power demand. And the portion of demand for power demand is going to really start ramping up after we get past 2026. So I think that the macro environment for natural gas is very strong. Anyway, so you just got to look at the production mix of each one of these companies and see what kind of hedging programs they have and stuff like that.
Well, Dan, let's just look a little bit more at a longer term outlook here, because I think many traders or investors are kind of like I am, where you watch these wild swings in the natural gas market. And it wasn't even that long ago that we had a major weather event just last month and prices spiked. And then as the contract rolled over, everyone thought the prices would stay high and the prices came right back down. They're even lower than where they were before that weather event. But longer term, what makes sense to you in terms of pricing? Is it in the $4 range? Could it even hold in the $5 range? Or quite frankly, is, let's say, $3.50, is that more reasonable?
Yeah, I think you got to set the range. And if you're going to evaluate a company or a drilling program or something, you got to say, okay, what's the low? What's the high? How big could this go? And a lot of these companies, they'll put out, you know, okay, if gas is $3, this is what our cash flow is. $4, it's what, you know, they show you different price ranges. But what I'm using in my forecast are, for next year, for 2027, I'm using $70 oil, which I think could be too conservative. And I'm using $4 gas, which I think is realistic. Now, that's the average for the year. It's just like this year, January, the January futures contract was trading for close to $8 for a while. And then it, you know, the next it rolls over to the February contract and it drops down to 350 again. And today we're looking at the April contract and it's what, 275 or something, like 280 right now. I'm looking at the screen. And think about it this way: you're short that contract. So you got to either deliver that gas or you got to take it if you're long. So if you're long, then that gas is going to go into storage. And if you don't need the gas, if you're a utility, so you have a sufficient amount of gas to make it through that month of April or May or whatever, then you don't want to take delivery because you'll have to pay those storage fees. But if you're on the other side of that thing and you're looking out to the next winter and you think, hey, it's going to be really tight next winter, why don't we buy some contracts to take gas in December and January of next year? And that's why those are so much higher than the front month of the NYMEX contract. So it's really not a forecast, the NYMEX future in a forecast. It's just what you can lock in the price today for. And so you got the risk of not having enough or the risk of having too much. And that's what drives the paper traders, really.
Well, and Dan, if we dive into the world of the energy stocks, as you mentioned, most companies aren't pure gas or pure oil anyways. They're a mix. They're a mix of oil, dry nat gas, but also natural gas liquids. And it's really that blend that gives companies an internal hedge, and they can play different things internally to balance the oil and the gas and the NGLs. So let's dive under the hood and talk about some companies that are massing up and they're growing. One company that we're going to discuss here today is Devon Energy, traded on the ticker DVN. And it is actually merging with Coterra Energy, traded on the ticker CTRA. And we've talked about Coterra before. Devon's a bigger company. Now it's becoming a much bigger company. This is one that you feature, but talk about, and this theme today is going to be, you know, M&A deals and some of the growth in the sector. Talk about this Devon Coterra deal.
Well, the point being really that when these deals close and they create a much larger company, and Devon, this is a very big deal. This is going to move their production up to 1.6 million BOE per day, with half of that being oil, or 800,000 barrels a day of oil. And that makes them a major part of our supply. And the bigger the company, the higher the multiple that they trade on. I value companies based on what I believe is a reasonable valuation of their cash flow, future cash flows, of operating cash flow. And in the good old days, when this market kind of made sense, companies of this size, of the size of Devon, and to tell you how big, they're going to be the second largest producer in the lower 48. I think ConocoPhillips is just barely ahead of them. And so, and they are going to be larger than EOG Resources. So EOG is currently trading about a 6.5 times operating cash flow, and Devon's only trading at about 5 times operating cash flow based on my forecast. And so when the deal closes and everything gets in line, you're going to see the Wall Street gang. They're going to revalue these companies because of their size. And, you know, we saw that recently with Whitecap about after the merger closed with Veren. And there's a couple quarters under the belt now of the combined results. And also, these companies are announcing how much they're reducing their costs, you know, their back office costs and their cost of pipe and completion. That completion cost for wells goes down because the bigger you are, you can get better contracts from the drilling companies and the oil field service companies.
So, Dan, if you're playing Devon right now, the stock is up, let's say, about 10% from when it announced this merger, and it was already trending higher since lows in the beginning of November. What drives it from here? Is it simply the closing of this transaction? Do you have time to still get in, or how would you time this?
Yeah, and I get Tip Ranks Premium, which is, it has all the current analyst reports on it. I mean, up to the minute, it's as soon as the analysts file a new report on it, and they rated a strong buy at today's price. I think it's like in the mid 40s or low 40s right now. And when the catalyst will be, first of all, there's always risk that a deal won't close. And a deal of this size sometimes requires all kind of government approval and stuff before it can close. Well, then once they close the deal. But in this case, there's no risk of them not getting financing because it's an all-stock deal. It's just a stock-for-stock transaction. And as a result of that, also, because nobody's having to go get big debt to buy Coterra, Devon's not going to incur any debt. They're just issuing more stock. The balance sheet post-merger is going to be very strong, you know, so they'll just, you know, merge their two balance sheets and they get all the cash that Coterra's accumulating now for selling their gas. Anyway, then after the merger, the companies always come out with much more detailed guidance. And that gives the analyst, energy sector analysts, and myself more confidence in their futures models. Now, on this particular one, Devon and Coterra were both in our Sweet 16 growth portfolio. And I've been following both of these companies for, Devon for like 20 years. I've been following them. And Coterra, just for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been following them, but I have a high level of confidence then in both my models. So it was very easy for me just to add them together. I mean, they're pretty much, the models almost look exactly the same because they're both upstream oil and gas companies.
Well, Dan, to that point, if you look at their charts, they kind of look the same too. So they're both growth oriented. We've talked about them both separately before, but to the point you made about the street needing a little time to digest it, I think this is what gives retail investors listening to this call an edge, is that before all the pieces are well known, there's this kind of transition period, which is what we're in right now with Devon and Coterra. Maybe contrast that against the other deal you brought up, which is another deal we want to discuss on this one, which is the Whitecap Veren deal that closed the middle of last year. Now the street's had a couple quarters to look at it, and you can see what the result was.
Yeah, and Whitecap already had a very good reputation, or no doubt about it. They've been a strong growth company. Like I sent you that note this morning that they had production growth, and they've been doing acquisitions, but very small, like property acquisitions and stuff. Nothing really big, but they've had a good record of drilling success too. So they increased year-over-year production growth by 20.5% in 2023, then another 11.4% in 2024. And the Veren deal, which closed on May 12th of 2025, that was a huge deal for them. And it increased their year-over-year production by almost 76%. And then their guidance for this year, for 2026, that they've just put out, is that they're going to increase production by another 20 to 22%. So it's just a classic growth and income stock, and I like it. I put Whitecap was actually in our high yield income portfolio because it has a great dividend yield and it pays monthly dividends, which is nice. Our members love monthly dividends, and the yield is 5.5%. So you get a good dividend check, each month. And you've got this, upside. And I think there's, maybe another 30 or 40% upside in the share price. It's just going to go with, and their production mix. What is it? I don't know, get out of here. But they have a pretty good production mix. Oh, yeah. It's 48.5% crude oil, 12% natural gas liquids, and then about 39.5% natural gas. And also, they have got some good contracts that they're able to sell their gas at NYMEX prices, not at AECO prices. So they reported some really good gas prices. That was a nice plus for them this last quarter. Anyway, just a good solid company. And Devon is too. I'm telling you, Devon is a very high quality operator. They're very highly respected. I think they have told the market that they believe there's $1 billion at least in synergy savings on drilling cost, personnel cost. A lot of times with these mergers, of course, a lot of people lose their jobs because you're going to reduce staff when you have just one public company versus two. It does add a entirely new core area in the Marcellus Shale up in Appalachia. That's where Coterra got a lot of their production from. You may not remember, but Coterra was formed by the merger of Cimarex into Cabot, and then they just totally renamed the company. And that's how Coterra ended up with a lot of acreage in the Permian Basin and in the Anadarko Basin in Oklahoma, which is where Devon already has significant operations. So that's where they're really going to get the cost savings, is in the Permian and in Oklahoma. And they might put up for sale what they have in Appalachia. I don't know if when the deal settles, because let's say gas prices are much higher. That's going to be a very valuable package if they do put it up for sale.
Okay, so on this Whitecap, you're getting some income, 5-ish%, which is decent, but it isn't, I guess, on the high side of some of the energy companies that pay out up to, let's say, 10 to 12%. But you are getting that growth as well. Since the stock has pretty much doubled from last year, shortly after the deal was announced, how important are energy prices to maintain kind of where they are for this growth to make sense, or does this company have protection on the downside?
Yeah, I mean, they have some of their production hedged. Let me see. Yeah, they don't have that much, but they have some production hedged at some pretty good prices, but it's only like maybe 15, 20% of their current production.
Would you like to see that higher then, Dan?
Yeah, and they're constantly, every time I look at these companies, they've added more hedges, it seems like, when they get the chance. Like, so say you get a weather-related event that, caused the price to spike, if they can do it. But in the futures market, yes, it spiked in the January contract, but it didn't spike in the, the summer months contract, so they don't want to lock that in. So anyway, but that, there's a cost to doing the hedging too. There's always a risk that you hedged it too low of a price and you give up the futures, the upside too. Some people don't like that, but it's, they have a strong balance sheet. I mean, Devon and Whitecap have really strong balance sheets, so they really don't need to hedge just to protect, to buy that insurance that the commodity prices don't go down. But anyway, and then they can adjust their drilling programs if needed to deal with lower prices too. But they put out there with pretty conservative forecasts that they're going to generate about $1.5 billion of free cash flow. So they feel confident that they got enough protection.
Well, Dan, when you think about M&A in the energy sector, it's actually been pretty exciting for the last couple of years. Compared to the space we inhabit more in the mining sector, there hasn't been as many of these caliber of deals. Now, there was a couple of years back the big deals with some of the major players in the oil patch, but even recently we've talked on the show about some of the ones you've highlighted, like SM Energy or Crescent Energy, where Crescent is buying Vital Energy, SM Energy is buying Veritas, Civitas. So it's, and we talked about this when we were just in the money show in Las Vegas, that some of these deals, while they're happening, there's that disarray. Well, if you tie that into what we saw in Whitecap, now Whitecap's a lot bigger company, but if you look back at May of last year, it was still down at the lower part of its range. It was after that that it had the trajectory. So again, just for future M&A deals that we see in the space, or this time period now where some of these companies that we've highlighted on previous episodes are in transition, what other advice would you give to investors looking at these, but seeing maybe some of these mergers, like if you look at SM Energy or if you look at Crescent Energy, their charts aren't amazing right now, but could they eventually look like the Whitecap chart once people digest all of this?
Yeah, they could. And they announced fourth quarter results last night. Both SM and Crescent Energy did on Wednesday after the market closed. So this afternoon, I'm going to be updating my pro forma forecast for them. The Vital merger into Crescent Energy closed on December 15th. So it's been closed for a few months. And Crescent, and they did report, Crescent Energy reported decent fourth quarter results. I think that actually beat my forecast, but their guidance for next year was a little bit below. Now they've sold some assets, so that has something to do with the production going down a little bit. And they're going to get the sales proceeds from that, so that shores up their balance sheet. The good thing about Crescent, it does pay a decent dividend too, so that's something to keep in mind. Now Civitas, the merger into SM, I really like that deal. And that's a pretty big deal. It creates like a top five largest producing companies. So it's a pretty big deal. Not close to what Devon, the size of the Devon merger, but it's still a very material deal and gives them a ton of running room in both the DJ Basin and in the Permian Basin. Those companies, those assets really fit together very well. So I like that deal quite a bit. So anyway, yeah, I just think, I think the big move is going to happen after they have one full quarter of combined results. Then you're going to see the stocks really move. But I don't think there's a lot of downside risk right now. And they all pay nice dividends. So.
Dan, the one thing that just continues to, in a way, surprise me is XLE, that energy select sector ETF. Oh my, has it just taken off at the beginning of this year? And it's been almost the exact opposite chart over the last couple of years from what we saw from the underlying oil and even nat gas charts. It was continuing to trade in higher ranges, break out, and now it's really broken out. XLE is up about 25% just this year. What does that tell you about the interest in the oil sector? It's clearly not hated by these kind of moves in the stocks, but again, it wasn't being supported by broadly higher energy prices.
Well, I've been doing this. I've said EPG since 2003, and there just kind of comes a point where it's just like you start to feel that people are going to say, "Hey, wait a minute, we're going to be needing oil and gas for a long time," and these companies are very profitable. they pay nice dividends. And you know, there's and then they see a lot of times in commodity super cycles. Some people are saying we're now in a commodity super cycle. The metals, usually the gold, the silver, copper, palladium, they kind of lead the way. But then, you know, the black gold joins the party. And you've got U.S. oil production has peaked. It is going to be way down from in January. When EIA puts out their report and shows actual production for January, it's going to be way below because of weather-related deals. But it's not going to bounce all the way back either. We're just not completing enough wells now to keep production even flat. So, and the Permian Basin especially, but the U.S. oil production growth has been responsible for about 90% of the world's production growth for the last 8 or 10 years. So with U.S. production flatlining and then maybe actually declining, where is it going to come from to meet future demand? And think about this, like all the oil wells that are producing today are on decline. All wells deplete, start going down soon after their pressure starts to be declining after they go online. So if we've got 105 million barrels a day of current supply, well, 20 years from now, half of that production is going to be gone. So it's not like the current wells just keep producing at the current rate. They're going down. So you got to replace the depletion rate in addition to the increasing demand. And there's nobody forecasting now that oil demand is going to go down, or and especially gas demand, natural gas demand around the world is going up at a rate about 3 or 4 times faster than oil demand. Natural gas is the future. It's going to be the number one thing for generating electricity for all these AI data centers and everything. There's just nothing that can ramp up fast enough to do to produce the power that these things are going to need. And electricity demand just keeps going up all around the world. And natural gas or coal, I even think coal demand is going to keep going up.
Yeah, there's definitely a big need for the electricity component. There's a big need for the heating and cooling component. But just based on what Corey asked you and some of your answer there, when you look at the XLE and the producers and the move they've had and the anticipation for eventually higher oil prices, as you expect this year, maybe up into the mid to high 70s, are the producers already pricing that in advance because the market's forward-looking? Or was this a re-rating that needed to happen? And if we see that move into the 70s, do these things keep blasting even higher than they've already moved?
Like, you know, when we started this and we said, you know, oil prices last quarter in the fourth quarter were pretty low. They were down in the 50s, right? We got all these companies reporting fourth quarter results that are beating everybody's expectations. And they're going, and so investors are going, wait a minute. The companies have adjusted. They, you know, they're making money now. And now the oil's like in the mid 60s. Gas had a big spike at the beginning of the year, but it's, you know, it's down, pulled back from that, but it's still a pretty decent price. And, you know, people are saying, hey, these companies are money makers and they're rotating money into. And I think the AI, you know, bubble or whatever you want to call it, I think people are harvesting those profits and shifting it into companies that are actually producing real revenues. And, you know, the numbers are incredible on some of these companies, and I just cannot believe, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and companies of the size of Devon or even Whitecap, they should be trading for 6, 7, 8 times operating cash flow, and they're trading for like 4 or 5. I mean, so there's maybe a 20, 30% increase just to get them up to almost reasonable valuations. And, you know, as companies get bigger, you know, they get more secure. They have a bigger asset base. They don't, you know, every well isn't a big risk for them. You know, and especially the ones that hold a lot of running room, because, you know, we're eventually going to run out of $60 oil, and you're going to have higher prices, that's for sure, to, you know, start drilling in the tier two areas of the Permian and stuff. So it just, I don't know, these companies just look like bargain prices to me. And I think that's what you're seeing. The money managers are just rotating into that. And I can always tell you too, the market's going to start picking up when I start getting new members, because we've had kind of a decent pickup in our membership.
I bet you have, Dan. And again, it's just been, in a way, I think still surprising just how well these stocks have done when the underlying prices have been moving down. Oil and natural gas have been, in a way, kind of in a downtrend. Oil for the last few years. And yes, it's recovering now, but still just back to prices seen in September. So there still could be a lot of work to the upside, but man, these stocks definitely not being ignored. There is money shifting into them. And valuations, well, I guess we're going to see how valuations play out here, because if the oil price keeps moving, then that's supportive. But if it does slow down again, you got to expect some sort of a correction in some of these stocks. But that's why I like when you focus on these story stocks and ones that have made recent acquisitions, recent mergers, and have these growth plans that actually make sense. So, Dan, we're wrapping it up here. Again, Dan Steffens is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. You can click that link in the show notes on our website, in your podcast player, or on our YouTube channel. As always, just search The KE Report. And everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. Hope you enjoyed it. Keep in touch with Shad and I. We love hearing from each and every one of you. And thank you to everyone who showed up to that Las Vegas Money Show and said hi to us. Dan, thanks for your time, everyone. Have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.